Doggy, we are talking about a Western this week in Red Dead Redemption, and we're adding it to the endless list on It's So Bad.
That was ridiculous, as promised.
Yeah, Hello, Steve. That wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be, but yeehaw.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Matt. How are you guys doing?
Howdy.
As we make our way through more additions to the endless list here in our quarantine state, still currently quarantined, we are social distancing and doing a podcast via the interwebs, the tubes and channels of the interwebs. And how's everybody doing today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just here live at Coots Chapel.
I'm wishing I was in Mexico.
The famous Coots Chapel.
Yeah.
I've been spending some time by Blackwater, you know, just taking in the scenery.
I'm bounty hunting by day and losing all my money at poker and armadillo by night. So, you know.
It's New Austin and what's the other place? West Elizabeth and Nuevo Paradiso in Mexico. Yeah, Nuevo Paradiso is where I want to spend my time, not anywhere else. Those other places are quite bland, except for Blackwater's all right.
Blackwater's cool. You got tall trees, you know, you got Beecher's Hope out there. You got some high plains. It's nice.
There's paved roads in Blackwater. Shit was crazy back then.
Yeah, they even got a movie theater.
It has a little town square with a fountain.
Wow. So you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere you find your podcasts. We are adding this week Red Dead Redemption to our endless list. It is one of the first open world games on our list, I believe, as I peruse the list. Have we played an open world game yet?
I'm trying to think what the most open world
like,
we experienced.
Like Dishonored,
was.
Maybe? Is kind of open world, but not really. That's pretty level based. Yeah.
Well, Spider-Man 2 is open world.
Oh, Spider-Man 2. Yeah.
Batman Arkham Asylum is a little open world, I guess.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Pretty small world, though.
The Riddler trophies, maybe. They remind me of an open world mechanic.
Those shitty Riddler trophies.
I liked them.
I didn't like.
Oh, that's my least favorite part.
So we're adding this game to our endless list, which is our list of games, which currently goes from, let's see, Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser. This is our 77th entry on the endless list. We add a new game every week, or most weeks, to the endless list. And it is based upon what... Let's go around the room. Steve, what's it based upon?
It's based upon our very scientific method that takes into account kind of completeness of vision, artistic elements, gameplay, graphics, audio, sound, fun factor, you know, pretty much, you know, all the key ingredients to a good video game, or maybe a bad video game.
You know, legacy goes a long way. See our Space Invaders episode.
Maybe too much, but, I don't know, there's like a gut feeling too for me.
Yeah, a lot of gut feeling.
Of how good a game really is.
Yeah, I feel games in my gut a lot.
I feel them, man.
Especially these days, with a bigger gut, a quarantine gut.
So this game was developed by Rockstar San Diego, published by Rockstar Games. I think it's our second Rockstar game on this list. Might be even more I'm going through. Actually, third, because Thrasher, Skate, and Destroy was
very similar
Rockstar game.
What's the other one?
So... L.A. Noir.
Oh, right. I forgot that you did that.
Yeah, so we did do that. Game was released in 2010, which was, just to kind of go over the open worldy games that are in the similar genre. So 2001, you had GTA 3, which kind of revolutionized the open world experience. 2002, you had GTA Vice City, along with Elder Scrolls Morrowind. 2004, you had Red Dead Revolver, which is in this lineage. GTA San Andreas also came out in 2004.
Revolver was an open world game?
It was not. It's just the, you know, part of the series, right, in quotes. 2006 is Elder Scrolls Oblivion, and 2008 you had GTA 4 and Fallout 3, and then 2009 you had Batman Arkham Asylum. So 2010 is when RDR came out, Red Dead Redemption, along with Fallout New Vegas. So it's kind of what leads up to this, just kind of set the stage for when this game came out. It was a spiritual sequel to Red Dead Revolver, as we said, came out for PS3 and Xbox 360. There was an 800-person development team that worked on this game. It was kind of one of the largest development teams at the time. And the combined development and marketing budget of this game was $80 to $100 million.
Jeez.
It's a big game.
It shows.
Something I also want to mention before we even get into, like, kind of the game and the story and the gameplay. Post this game, so after 2010, in 2011, it was kind of like there was a revolution, I would say, in open world games. So I would say that this game is like GTA 4 was really the beginning of the second wave of open world games. And it kind of crested and went into where it hit its peak was 2011. And that's when Skyrim came out, and also Arkham City and Minecraft as well. So those are like three games that, I'd say Skyrim and Minecraft more so, kind of revolutionized gaming, because Skyrim was so big and Minecraft just made, like, you could interact with everything. You could craft things, which wasn't a big thing before 2011. So this kind of game was kind of like, we're taking elements from the first wave and we're making them modern in Red Dead Redemption. And then in 2011, they were like, we're going to change things a lot and we're going to introduce some really revolutionary features. And that's when you kind of, in like 2014 and 2013 is when you start seeing the third wave of open world games, which I would say is like The Witcher 3. And you start to see games like GTA 5 with the online was more revolutionary. And like Breath of the Wild came out in 2017 or 2016. So those were games that were more dense and were bigger. So,
yeah, and then obviously you get Red Dead Redemption 2 in 2018, the peak of open world, like, potential right now.
Yeah, and I have yet to play that game, so I don't. Steve, are you the only person on this call that's or on this? I say call on this podcast.
We're on a Discord call
on the on the podcast that's played Red Dead Redemption 2. I don't know if Matt, you haven't played Red Dead Redemption 2.
I have. I played God knows how many hours. I made it. I don't know, Steve. You tell me. I made it to the island.
You got pretty far in there. And that, you were probably like 3/5 of the way done. Because I think there's like, right, five kind of acts you can divide it into, maybe six.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay. A little bit more than,
well, I think at the time I realized how much more I had and I didn't want to commit to it.
Yeah, so that island section is a little jarring. You got to get thrown off the story a little bit. And you're like, oh, yeah, we're on an island in the Caribbean now. How'd that happen?
Right.
Oh, that's weird. I have to play that game. I have that game. I bought that game for less than $20 from a GameStop that was closing near us. So I have to play.
Seems like a good deal.
Yeah, exactly.
The island section is kind of like a weird, like, kind of change of pace point where you divide up the story. They eventually get off the island, obviously. But yeah, it's a big game. It's a big game.
So this game is basically taking what Rockstar did in GTA 4 and putting a Western aesthetic around it. A lot of it, I would say, if anybody else wants to not agree with me.
No, I mean, this is very clearly them adapting GTA's whole engine and design to just another, theme or time period. I mean, they've only really done it with this, though. They haven't. I would have thought they'd do it with more games by now, but...
Well, I guess...
Or more themes.
L.A. Noire is probably the other example, because it was like the 50s L.A., but you're still...
I haven't played it. But I don't know how similar it is mechanically.
L.A. Noire is way different mechanically in terms of the primary verb of how you interact with that world is via interviews. So it's very, very different game. There is not a lot of action in that game, and the action sequences are terrible. And that game also doesn't run on Rockstar's Rage engine. So the Rage engine is the Rockstar advanced game engine, which is what GTA 4, GTA 5, and Red Dead Redemption 2 run on. So they've updated the engine as they've created more games to make it more, to add more features to it. But yeah, this is, L.A. Noire wasn't a Rage engine or Rage game.
Did they use this engine all the way back to GTA 3?
No, it started with GTA 4.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, it feels, I mean, you can tell when you play a Rockstar game because it has a very distinct feel to it with the movement and just the weight of the characters. And I'm actually surprised it was a different engine from GTA 3 because it kind of made me feel like just like I was playing a little bit more an evolved engine than that. So,
right. From this almost feels more like GTA 3 than GTA 4. At least in my memory.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
I played GTA 4 recently.
This does look like, to me, GTA 4 in the Old West. Although it's not really the Old West because it's set in 1911, so you get like a little bit of like the modern world creeping in. It's supposed to be the end of the Old West. But yeah, I mean, it's right. Like if you look at videos, like I was watching some videos of GTA 4 before this, and like there's a lot of similarity between them in like character design and like graphics, but it's just more polished.
Yeah,
it's 2 years later.
Right, it's 2 years later. So they were making this game at the same time they were making GTA 4.
Right.
So we mentioned the setting. It's the year 1911, the last decade of the West. The game begins, and I think it kind of sets that tone by taking a car off a boat right at the very start. So it's like, yo, there's cars in this world, but we're in the Old West. So right. It's very, like, it's an interesting time period. It's got that rock star thing they do where they're like, this is the real world, but it's totally not the real world because you're in New Austin and West Elizabeth and Nuevo Paradiso. And I think they do that so they're like, if they're making fun of something, or they don't have to make fun of something, they can just kind of create their own shit to make fun of, but they're actually making fun of stuff in the real world. It's like a CYA thing, cover your ass.
Yeah, it's like a satirical version of America, pretty much. And like Elizabeth and New Austin are supposed to kind of be like Texas and then and Arizona, I guess. And then you get like Northern Mexico.
I think it's New Mexico and Texas in particular.
Yeah, so you get like that southwestern vibe, but you kind of get like the eastern Texas, like into Louisiana, Texarkana. Like there's some swamps, there's some like forested areas.
Right.
Yeah, I think it being sort of fictitious names just lets you get away with much more.
Right.
But there is like...
Yeah, and it also means they don't have to take chances, right? So they don't have to like piss anybody off.
I mean, they piss plenty of people off, but they do cover their ass a little bit with it. They're like, it's not really
how,
America.
How much of you, how many conversations you have with that shopkeeper in Armadillo in the general store? He's got some interesting takes on.
Oh, I was going to bring him up in the chat the other day. Yeah,
yeah. I think he has a lot more to say in the I'm going to guess we'll probably talk about Undead Redemption later. This episode, he has a lot more to say in that game.
I don't think I ever talked to him. I might have talked to him like once.
So there's
no,
Chris, go ahead.
I'll just tread lightly and just say he is an extremely, extremely racist fella. And his story as it plays out in Undead, not to jump right into Undead, but you visit him during like one mission and he talks about how he essentially does not like people who have a certain religious affiliation, racial affiliation, and sexual orientation, and he rants about it for 5 minutes. And then John Marston proceeds to watch him get eaten by zombies, and he's like, "Nope, that's what you get." So.
Yeah, people get their comeuppance in Undead Nightmare. Like the
quick question here, just in this moment: are there any black people in this game?
Yes.
Who's a like a figure you talk to?
Seeing that, you know, this game kind of taps into my gambling problem. I played a lot of poker in this game, and there one of the poker players is black that you play often.
Oh, does he talk to you though? Does he have lines?
Yeah, is there like a story or a narrative to his character?
No. It's all kind of like the stock kind of like NPC lines they drop while you're playing poker. Like they're just kind of talking about like the day's events. And
how good is he at poker? When you saw him at the table, were you worried, or did you see dollar signs?
I started to notice the more I played poker that some guys definitely had like their styles of playing that were like actually kind of fleshed out, which means I played an insane amount of poker in this game. And
it's pretty cool.
He routinely was one of the better poker players in the game, if I remember right.
I'll occasionally play like casino games and video games, but sometimes when they're like really slow, I can't play them. And this game was like tremendously slow.
It's like, too cinematic.
Yeah, because like I like try to get all of the things you can do, all the things you can do in Yakuza games. So I like have sat down and like played casino games in order to get the amount of chips it takes to like get the achievement or whatever you need to do to get that. And like those games go pretty quickly, but that game was just like so long in Red Dead Redemption. I played it once and I was like, I can't do this, because even skipping it, it would be like fade out,
right?
Fade
right.
In.
You know, we don't.
That's kind of a theme that runs through this game and the next game, or like a common criticism for a few things, that it's just, it can get needlessly cinematic when it's still just a video game, like carving hides of like animals and shit like that.
Yeah, that took that animation.
It just adds like this time to playing the game that you wish you could just get over at some point.
See, but that's like a very intentional thing, though. Like they talk about that all the time in 1 and 2 for Red Dead. Like this is deliberately supposed to be a slower pace than like the insanity of GTA, which is just like things blowing up, people like popping up in your face, like gun battles, cops everywhere. This is much, much slower.
One of the lead directors or producers, his name is Dan Houser. He recently left Rockstar. He is like very much got a directorial vision about what he wants to see from like cinematics and every scene. And I've seen it in detail, him talking about GTA 5 in particular, and how like everything is framed in a certain way, even the way they set up the environment to make it seem like it's cinematic. So, and I think it's only gotten progressively, I won't want to say worse or better, but he's progressively gotten into that as he's made GTA 5 and Red Dead Redemption 2. With the cinematics and stuff. Like, I believe when you first start Red Dead Redemption 2, you were, like, walking in snow, and he made sure that the footprints are visible and that, like, the sun was cresting over the horizon as you, like, start up that game, and he had, like, a very specific way that he wanted you to see this game.
Attention to detail.
Yeah, and I guess your enjoyment of that depends on how much you want to be immersed in this world and kind of role-play the Old West.
I mean, I think it's 95% of the time it's done masterfully and it's perfect, and you can't find that kind of detail anywhere else. But it's things like the carving the hide sort of animation that you have to see over and over and over. Those are I know they're deliberate. It's just they can get grating on people.
You don't have to go hunting that much if you don't want to, though. Like, I didn't like it at all.
It was much more of a problem in 2.
If you're hunting over and over again, that's your choice.
I guess, like, too, like, for the hunting, it's, I mean, you know, I found that currency was kind of like a premium in this game, and, you know, you have to hunt to get the materials to sell it, you know, whereas where I took more the stance of, you know, I'm going to play poker for 45 minutes at a time and hope to get $400 a pop that way. So that was my approach to make money.
I had a very real gambler experience at one point in Mexico where I was trying to save up enough money to buy like a room so I could save the game and change my outfit. And they were playing poker outside, and I was like, oh, I'll just win a little bit more money to put me over the top. I think I needed like $200, and they took me for everything I had. And I was like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake.
Damn.
You should have just done that side mission where the guy like asks you to go get $1,000 and then you just keep it. Don't give it to him. Do you ever find that one?
I think I did do one of those missions, but I think I gave it back.
Yeah. I just shot him. I was like, screw you, I'm taking the money. It's like one of the only times I was like, nah, I'm going to keep this time.
Somebody did run up to me and ask me to rob a stagecoach that had pulled into town with a bunch of grain. And I was like, oh yeah, I'll do that. And then I realized I was committing a crime. And I was like, oh shit, I've made a mistake.
And then I realized I was committing a crime.
It is funny when you commit a crime and there's like the police that come after you, police in quotes, and it's like, do they have radios? How do they know to come and get you?
Word of mouth. Your legend has spread over the land, and they've heard.
They
from
just
the
copy pasted that code from Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
I never had that.
I was surprised. I was surprised tanks never showed up. Like,
just I never had that problem because I played like a very honorable cowboy throughout this game.
Oh, I did too. I had the highest honor you could get at the end of the game.
Should we get into the story a little bit here? A little bit of the gameplay?
Yeah, so just in terms of story, so you are, the way the game sets it up is that you get off a train and you're in Armadillo, right, at the very start?
That's originally, right? You stop in Blackwater, but then you get on a train for Armadillo, which is like in the middle of the Old West.
But you don't take control until you go to Armadillo.
That's right.
And you're sent there by the federal government or the FBI, and you don't really know why. You kind of find out that your family's been kidnapped, essentially, by the FBI in order for you to hunt down former gang members, which are Bill Williamson, Javier Escuela, and Dutch Vanderlyn, in exchange for the release of your wife and kid. But it's unclear why they specifically chose you and what they have on you to keep you and make you force you to do this and to kidnap your kid and wife.
Yeah,
basically, I assume it's related to Red Dead 2.
Yeah, like, basically, they know that you, and this comes out later, but they know that you've had a falling out with the gang, that you have no love for them, and they kind of don't want to get their hands dirty going after these old gang members. And there's a line that like one of the agents says that was like, I'm not trying to make a martyr out of any of these people. Like, if the government comes after them and kills them, that's like turning them into heroes. But if they're just shot by like a member of their gang from a falling out, that's another thing. Nobody will care.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems that I had with this game in terms of the story was that the setup wasn't great, and you play for like, I don't know, 10 or 15 hours before you really get into understanding what the story is. Because you're like,
it's a slow burn, but
right. You hunt down Bill Williamson at first, and he shoots you, and you wake up at Bonnie's ranch, and you're like, all right, so this guy went after his former friend and just kind of showed up at the gate, and the guy shot him. Like, what the F is going on here? Like, I get, like, the federal government has his wife and kids and is forcing him to hunt down these people. But, like, why? And it's so, like, it's such a slow burn in order to understand what the actual stakes are in this story. So, I don't know.
I think that the story gets the richest when you get to, like, the family elements and, like, Dutch, and you really start to understand, like, kind of the gang dynamics and what's happened since then. Before that, it's very generic, like old Western tale where you're just kind of like, okay, he's in this town, he meets all these crazy side characters. Now he's in Mexico, he meets all these revolutionaries. It's only later that it really picks up.
Right.
It's very GTA when before you get to Blackwater, in that it's very like sarcastic in its tone and very like caricatures of characters, like the gravekeeper guy, Irish, the weapons guy, the guy who sells the potions or the snake oil. Yeah.
Nigel West Dickens.
So, and everybody except for the old timer in Mexico, everybody is just a caricature in Mexico. Like the general, it feels like you're playing Three Amigos.
Well, even though the old timer is like an old gunslinger, like that's a classic like archetype.
Right.
Yeah, but the way he's written is very like, or like he's a real person as opposed to like the general and the revolutionary are straight up Three Amigos characters. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I kind of felt like this game thematically was kind of a combination of The Unforgiven and then the Paul Newman and Rob Redford, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. I feel like it was like those two movies kind of squished together. But yeah, but John as a character, though, I realized if somebody wants John to do something, they just gotta tell him they know where the guy is that he's hunting, and he won't like, you know, put any thought. He'll just believe that person, and he will then do whatever task it is require him to do.
Even if that task is
a little annoying.
Even if that task is racing horse and buggy carts for some reason, or you know, right. Making a random delivery and tracking down somebody's like a, you know, like wayward spouse or something weird.
He'll say something like accidentally poetic as he agrees to do it.
He's a poetic man, you know. He's got a deep soul. Yeah. He's not just a silent brooding type.
It's always a little bit like a half-assed threat to shoot someone in the head, but then agreeing to do
he
it.
He threatens to kill Nigel West Dickens so many times. Every time he sees him, he's like, I'm going to shoot you in the head. And Nigel West Dickens is like, no, I got another scheme. And he's like, all right, I'm in. You son of a bitch, I'm in.
It's like also he talks to Seth Briers, who's the graveyard treasure guy, and he's like, you're just a crazy motherfucker. And like, he doesn't threaten to shoot him at all, but Nigel West Dickens, for some reason, he's like, every time he's like, I'm gonna fucking kill you next time I see you. But like Irish and the grave robber guy, who does awful things, the grave robber guy is implied to have sex with corpses at one point. And he's just like, yeah, this guy's crazy.
And if you think about the team that John Marston assembles to go after Bill Williamson, like, what the hell is Seth's role in that whole thing? Like, Irish is the weapons expert or whatever. He knows where the gun is. Nigel West Dickens is, like, the con man with the horse and the carriage that they're going to use as, like, the Trojan horse. Seth just, like, sneaks into the base and, like, dances around to distract him. That's it. That's the only thing he does.
Yeah, so we get after they assault the fort and Williamson flees to Mexico to meet up with Javier Escuela, you go down to Mexico and you guys' favorite scene happens.
Oh, the
so you're
so
on the
good. So good. It's everyone's favorite. It should be everyone's favorite scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you go down the raft and there's a mission where you have to shoot guys when you're on a raft, and then you get to Mexico and Jose Gonzalez's Far Away starts playing in the background as you ride. And it's like, for me, I think we've talked about this extensively in our chat, but it's like a folk song and it sounds like a modern folk song. It doesn't sound like a song from the Old West for me. So for me, it took me out of the moment in particular. I thought this game did a very good job of keeping me immersed for the most part. But that particular moment, I was like, my eyes rolled like they haven't rolled since I saw Luke Skywalker dust off his shoulder in The Last Jedi.
All right, let's not bring The Last Jedi into this. Sorry.
I played this on PS Now, which has that song removed. Although there is like a stock piece of music behind it where the guitar sounds a little bit similar to what the pop song was or folk song was, because I looked it up, but. I did not have that lack of, or I was not taken out of the immersion, because fortunately I did not have that song in the version that I played for whatever reason.
I will say I don't know if you guys remember this at all, but at the very beginning of Breath of the Wild, and you'll roll your eyes at this because I know Matt in particular is just going to roll his eyes when I say this, but when you leave the cave in Breath of the Wild, you just kind of reach out and you're on top of the Great Plateau and it shows you the world. And there's like a subtle musical cue and it turns into a cinematic in particular. And the camera will move with you and it takes control away from you. And it's like such a beautiful moment where you're shown the world for the first time. And the flourish of the music is so good that is what I was looking for. And instead I got this like poppy folk song from the mid-aughts that were completely out of what the time period was, and I didn't think suited the moment. But I guess you guys really, really,
I'm
really
sorry you didn't scene. Enjoy it like everybody else did.
For me,
after I looked it up, I'm happy I didn't hear it.
No, for me, I spent a lot of time in New Austin in that first playthrough of this game. And just looking across the water being like, I know I can get to Mexico eventually, but I can't get in there. I probably like tried to go across bridges a bunch of times and realized they were out. And so like finally being in Mexico and riding through there. And the first time I did it, it was like full moon, starry night, like all the beautiful visuals. And this song came on. I was like, ooh, this is working for me right now.
And like you don't have any distractions during it. You're just riding your horse in. You're seeing like a new geography and new scenery that you're not used to. I think it was done really well. I never once thought about the time period of the song.
Yeah, and it's also like a folk song, like which doesn't strike me as being completely out of place in an Old West game, especially an Old West game set in 1911 with some modern elements to it.
So you brought up a good point in the change of scenery when you get down to Mexico, Matt. One of the things that I thought was very of its time when I was playing this game is that when you're in New Austin, it's very samey, the geography. Like, I know they did a good job of evoking what the West is, but one of the things that I think modern open world games do better in terms of how they design their environment design is that they'll have landmarks that just kind of pop up and you can look at them wherever you are and kind of place where you are. And the whole New Austin area didn't felt very samey and didn't have those landmarks.
I feel like to me, like mechanically, its purpose is just preventing you from pausing and going to the map. Like
right.
Making the player able to navigate just with what's on screen is important and not always, I think, the easiest thing to implement. I don't know how they would have had to do it with more like natural scenery.
Right. Yeah,
Red Dead Redemption 2 does a better job of that. Like, there are parts of, like, you're in the plains, and that whole game is set more in the east, so it's not really a desert environment, but, like,
right.
There's certain
it's
rock...
It's more varied.
Yeah, there's certain rock formations and, like, crossroads that you come to, and you're like, okay, I know where I am.
Yeah, so when I talk about environment design that's, like, a landmark, the only one that I can think of that did a good job of that was the in between Armadillo and Bonnie's Ranch, there's, like, a staircase that you have to go up, and that was a very specific landmark where you can't go between those areas unless you go up this like incline, and that's those type of features is what I'm looking for. And even things like color changes in the environment is stuff that you can like visually perceive where you are differently and where you're going.
Right, lighting.
I think the like high plains where you're talking about, you go up that like one road that's like off the side of the cliff, and you get to like the high plains
right.
around Bonnie McFarlane's ranch. Like that yep. area of the game is my favorite like designed area in terms of like the natural scenery and everything. Like, because it's not as just like plain and dusty as like the you know lake basin or whatever where Armadillo is. Like, it's got some variety to it.
I like going in between when you go between those two towns. It's very pretty there as opposed to just being very bland when you're on the U.S. side. It reminds me of like the Mediterranean in particular. It's pretty cool.
And the music is different down there too because it's got like more of the like Mexican trumpets and like guitar, which is kind of cool. So you get the
poncho, which is the greatest
outfit
in that game.
What a look that is!
Yeah, the fistful of the dollars trilogy poncho.
Yeah.
I guess I was a little bit different. I had a little bit different view than you guys. I actually found the Mexican area to be more bland to me, and it just like when the story to me moved to Mexico, I didn't spend any time doing any side quests or anything like that. I pretty much was just trying to kind of bang through the story because I just felt it was more of like a living world in America, where I felt the section in Mexico felt less, I don't know, it felt less alive to me.
It was so driven by the whole revolution thing that you were kind of, there was like an urgency to just keep playing the missions.
Yeah, the story missions there in that part of the game were awesome. Like, they were a little bit more like action focused and, you know, a little bit like bigger gun battles and stuff like that. And, but I just kind of felt there just wasn't a lot to do in between that I would have enjoyed.
They also felt incredibly racist, but that just me.
Everything in this game is a caricature. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely racist
stuff.
I mean, and back to the shopkeeper in Armadillo, like he's had some choice words for people. So whenever they play up those rock star caricatures, you can get yourself in trouble.
I also think just the whole struggle where they were like, oh yeah, there's this general who's a tyrant and there's Reyes the rebel and Allende who's the general. And they're like, you know, there's one person saying he's like a socialist and he's a man of the people. And one person is saying that he's, you know, the general and he's the guy that's in control. And then when Reyes takes control, he just becomes the general and it's implied that he's just doing the same shit. And it's like, these people are savages constantly in their squabbles and they'll never be civilized like we are in the good old US of A.
Yes, but that's when you get that wise John Marston commentary. And he says it later too, when he's meeting with that like racist professor who's studying the Native Americans and he keeps calling them savages. And he's like, I think we're all savages. He says it in a more John Marston poetic folksy way, but it's just like everybody's right. bad. That's kind of all the power structures are bad. And that's like something John Marston is always remarking about.
I wish they talked about that more, because that brings us to going into Blackwater when you actually meet up with the FBI and you find out that your wife is back at your ranch and your son's there as well with your uncle in quotes. But then you get into talking about hunting down Dutch Vanderland, and that's when it starts to get into more social commentary about power structures and government and stuff like and the role of government. Before that, like, the government's like this big evil that they're like, oh, they're really bad because they do bad things, and It's just, I fucking hate when stories use the government in quotes to be the big bad. I fucking hate it. I cannot fucking stand it. And
we got a government man over here.
Yeah, weird.
And
yeah.
Interesting position to take in the Trump era.
Right.
But, I don't know. I think it's like time appropriate, and they're like dealing with. Well, I mean, it's, you know, the West is trying to become, or not trying to become. They're trying to resist, you know, like the civilization of the government and society sweeping in.
Yeah, and that's the big tension in the game, right? It's the modernity sneaking into the old West.
And the government is
what the theme is.
Yeah,
Is it? But is it?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. in this context, for sure.
I mean, they roll in with the government people use a car versus
they're like regulation.
They live in Blackwater, which is a more like technologically and like advanced like town compared to Armadillo or like the McFarlane Ranch.
Right. And the West wants to solve their own problems.
The government wants to stop people from being robbed and murdered by this Vanderland gang, but they're the big bad guys.
But they do it by robbing and they do it by kidnapping and murdering and unleashing a criminal into the Old West.
says the guy in the Mets jersey. So.
Yeah, I mean it's very tropey with like, you know, you have the lead like the lead captain investigator guy. He's just kind of like the stereotypical tropey, like, you know, he wants to wipe out this gang and he's going to do it through nefarious means, but it's like it's really to kind of further his own career. Then you kind of get the sidekick who just, you know, kind of props up everything the captain says, and it was a little tiring kind of hearing the same one note, like, you know, yes, we're doing this vile thing, but it's for the greater good because we're bringing civilization to this area. And it's tropey. It's like,
but if you
saying,
look at the way that like Doug Vanderland, and you if you play Red Dead Redemption 2, you get way way more of this. But it's almost like the opposite angle where you see the rottenness of like Dutch's gang in trying to be like this correcting force that's like more in tune with nature and the Old West and like rugged individualism, and you see that it's just as rotten too, because it's about, I feel like Red Dead Redemption, it's a lot about like individual people either being good or bad and like how they live in society and then like how those people fit into power structures. Mm-hmm. But like Dutch is not a good person, even though he thinks that he's like this Robin Hood figure.
I come to Rockstar Games for two things in their story: tropes and satire. And you know,
they're here.
This game gave me what I wanted as far as those two things.
Matt, I got some bad news for you. We live in a society that's just what all the satire has been for the past two decades is now what society is.
Yeah, I mean,
so I'm super curious what Rockstar Games does in the future with their games, because it's just like, I don't know how you can parody Trump in a GTA 6. Like, what does that even look like? What is these guys are parodies now. The real world is a parody.
Watch Dogs is having that issue. Like Black Mirror TV show is having that issue. Like, the current times.
Reality.
What's the appetite for that too? It's like, even with like superhero movies, you know, like there was like the really dark ones, but now and then there was like the Marvel ones, which were fun and flashy. And it's like, do people have an appetite for like this like terrible, you know, biting social commentary and satire in a world where they look out the window and they're like, oh, what a mess.
Yeah.
Every game, and will I think just also, have Lisa Shoot Larry will just be president in every game going forward. That's the
that sounds better.
It does. I do think though that the last like 3 or 4 hours of this game, when you get to Blackwater and you start hunting down Dutch Vanderland, are the strongest from a narrative perspective, because they do stop getting out of those tropes and these become like grounded characters with his when he goes to his ranch and he meets his wife. His wife sucks, by the way, and I'm excited to play RDR2 because it's it seems like she would probably get more fleshed out in that game, because she just seems like she's terrible in Red Dead Redemption.
I didn't really get that sense from her, but it's interesting because in Red Dead Redemption 2, John Marston is a side character, and he kind of floats in and out of the story, and so does Abigail's in there too, but you're seeing it through the eyes of Arthur Morgan, who is never referenced in Red Dead Redemption 1 at all. He's like a character that they create, but like Uncle, like when you meet Uncle at the ranch, Uncle is fleshed out a little bit. I mean, there's not much to flesh out. He's pretty much the same the whole way through. But
I do
still have like that weird mustard stain on his beard.
Always has. It's the tobacco. It's the chewing tobacco.
Oh, is that what that's supposed to be?
Even though I didn't finish Red Dead 2, I will say the amount of time I played it made me going back to the story of Red Dead 1 enjoy it that much more. Like, that much, they really do flesh out so much of the gang characters that end up in Red Dead 1.
Yeah, you get like hints of the family drama that exists between John Marston and Dutch and his family, and that is like the entire kind of push of Red Dead 2.
Like, I remember when I played Red Dead for the first time, like, getting to Dutch, like, I didn't really even care who Dutch was. And now he's got, like, such a history to him. It really, like, this game aged well with having Red Dead 2 now exist.
Red Dead 2 makes this game more impactful, like, because you have that setup.
And that all makes sense, but it's nice that it was pulled off.
So, so you guys played the Undead Nightmare game. I didn't play it.
I dabbled into it. I didn't play that much.
What did you guys think of it?
Oh, I loved it. I'm not done with it yet.
It's like the zombie kind of tongue-in-cheek, like, cult version of Red Dead Redemption, where it's set in an alternate world, but it's the same world as Red Dead Redemption, and there are zombies, and you have to survive.
Yeah, if you like campy B-movies and stuff like that, like I do, like, this is going to be right up your alley. It's just, you just ride around, like, you just kind of see zombies, like, kind of coming over hills in the distance. It has, like, a great atmosphere. You know, as you go to, like, those same towns that you're already familiar with, like, they're overrun by zombies, and you gotta clear the town, but, like, you know, the undead horde can come back after a set amount of time. You gotta go back and clear the clear the city again.
What's the narrative setup for it?
So it's very, like, tongue-in-cheek. So, timing-wise, it takes place, from what I can tell, after you have returned to your farm after killing Dutch, and you're kind of settling back down with your family. I think it takes place at that point in the Red Dead mainline story. And then, I forget who gets infected first, but maybe it's, like, uncle or something like that. But, like, someone in your family has been infected and has become a zombie, and basically the rest of your family gets bitten and becomes zombies. And you just tie up Abigail and your kid, who are zombies now, like, leave them in a room, just going, like, just stay here, don't eat any people, and I'm going to go out and find a cure. I'll be back. And that's pretty much, like, the whole setup. And then it's, like, the rest is, like, you just go into town. It's very, like, it's very lighthearted and very tongue-in-cheek. Like, everything is kind of, like, over-the-top comical. And then you ride to Blackwater, and you find the Blackwater is, like, just overrun with zombies. And you got to kind of defend the town. And, like, everyone's, like, just kind of saying, like, really over-the-top stuff. Like, everyone is, like, blaming, like, different racial groups or... Well, mostly just racial groups or political groups for bringing this virus, to this zombie plague.
Imagine a world where that happens. Wow.
It's some of the dialogue is a little on the nose. And then you basically just kind of, as you go to, like, the different towns and cities, like, you're trying to figure out if you can find a cure for your family. And I'm about, I don't think it's very long. I think it's, like, altogether probably, like, 6-7 hours. And I'm probably about, like, 4 hours in right now, I would say. But it's a lot of fun, because, like, it's not, the combat puts a little bit different emphasis than the mainline story does, which I don't think we really talked about. Like, a lot of times you get, like, those big set piece fights in the main story. It's a lot of taking cover and kind of poking behind rocks and shooting at shooting at the other cowboys, like, from cover, whereas, like, in the undead side, the zombies are just, like, running right at you. You don't have, like, you can't take cover anywhere. So it's a lot of, like, and we didn't actually even touch on this yet. You got to use the Deadeye mechanic, like, a lot to line up, like, your headshots with the zombies.
And, like, slow time. Because it slows time, too.
Right. And it's, there's also no currency in Undead. So you have to use.
The economy has shut down.
Yeah, there's no shops or anything like that. So you gotta get West Elizabeth back for all your ammo and
that's cool.
And your like power ups, like your whiskey to kind of boost your Deadeye back up. So it plays like a very actiony survival horror game, which is a lot of fun.
Back when Rockstar made single player DLC.
Yeah,
it was pretty good.
That's a good.
Turns out
that's a good point. Good point that we didn't touch on. This game had multiplayer modes, so there's co-op and competitive, but there's also, which were very of their time, like PS3 style, when they, like, crammed multiplayer games into like Uncharted and just random games that weren't really multiplayer games. But one of the things they did in this game that I think kind of probably led them into doing what they did in GTA 5 was the free roam mode. So you could go in and just roam around with other people. And that's definitely, I don't know if definitely, but that's probably where they got the idea to start building out the GTA 5 online stuff, which is like a fully fleshed out version of that with missions and ridiculous things you can do. And is one of the most popular things to do in gaming right now. GTA 5 online.
Yeah, and they have Red Dead Online too, with Red Dead Redemption 2. So like they've clearly put their money behind the kind of multiplayer online component of this versus DLC.
GTA 5, which is largely the main game, is like an above average game. The GTA 5 online is so popular that it's now like they make billions of dollars a year just on GTA 5 online.
It's constantly in the top selling Steam games.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's crazy.
Like every week.
Crazy to me. Have you guys ever played that at all, GTA 5 online?
I have not. I played GTA 4 online a little bit when that first came out, but I know that it's like a whole different level now.
I did some of those like crazy course online races where they're like user-made maps.
Right. But those are pretty fun. Yeah. Like they're like what's that game where you can make your own? Trackmania almost. Yeah. So, do we want to get into, we are now 45 minutes into this conversation. We should probably start talking about our ranking.
Let's do it.
Where we're going to put this game on our endless list.
Yep.
Which is, this will be our 77th entry. We have, as I mentioned at the start of this, Super Mario 64 is number one. I would imagine this game is going to be more on the top half of our list.
Yeah, so that seems reasonable.
Just a couple things to go down before we get into this. This game shipped 15 million copies.
15 or 50?
15, which is a lot. A lot.
Still a lot.
One.
But I guess GTA 5 is probably at like something like 80 ridiculous. Million.
Yeah, it's got to be absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know. Maybe that's a crazy number.
last count, GTA 5 sold 120 million copies.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Dang. So, jeez. That's a lot of copies. But 15 million, just in the
still
grand scheme of things, is a lot of copies of the game. Won GameSpy, GameSpot, and Spike Video Game Awards for Game of the Year for its year, for 2010. So, where do we begin on this list?
I mean, this is, I feel like this is knocking on the door of the top 10, if not a for sure top 10 game on this list. So, you know, but I'm willing to walk it up a little bit to get there, to kind of put it through its paces. But I think it's better than Age of Empires 2 and Super Metroid. So that puts it in the 9-10 range to begin with. That's my take.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where I'm, like, looking to start. But I have to say, like, I guess just my overall impressions of the game. Like, I mean, I didn't play this game until we were doing this podcast. And I was completely immersed, like, into... You know, I feel like even for like a 10-year-old open world game, I feel like this was a really immersive world. You know, obviously recognizing some games have come out since then that have had like a little bit, you know, better job of the immersion. But yeah, I really enjoyed this game, and I think this is a pretty upper, you know, somewhere between our definitely top 10, probably maybe top 12 games here.
Matt, you're up next.
I mean, I'm looking at this list. So, yeah, you're saying top 10. I mean, 10 is Age of Empires 2. I would have to think about it. I mean, I think that's debatable. I'm looking further down, though. Mega Man 2 is 11. Star Fox 64, 12. Final Fantasy 7 is at 13. I mean, I could see, like, I mean, Chris, do you think it's better than Final Fantasy VII?
You know, I think, you know, again, it's like, if we're not counting, like, Legacy, like, having replayed Final Fantasy VII recently for this pod, and then having played Red Dead Redemption for the first time, like, I had a lot more fun playing Final Fantasy VII in 2020.
I think Final Fantasy VII is a better game, and I didn't even love Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, I, you know, I,
at least for the purposes of the list.
You know, for you know, for Final Fantasy VII, I think I have more fun playing this, but looking at our list, like, you know, the only, the next two games that, like, give me a little bit of pause is, like, Star Fox 64 and Mega Man 2, I think are just so much fun overall. I think if I have to, like, you know, if it was, like, I was going to play one of those three games again, like, you know, I can only play one for, like, the rest of my life, it's probably going to be Mega Man 2 with Star Fox and not Red Dead. But once we kind of get past those two games, like, there's not a lot stopping Red Dead for me until it gets to, like, Final Fantasy IV. And then if you even...
Of course.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, you know, even then, Shovel Knight, you know, Shovel Knight is just, like, just insanely fun. And, you know, we didn't touch on it, but, you know, I was sending messages to you guys, like, I was playing it, like, you know, Red Dead and Undead in particular, like, they have, like, a lot of bugs that kind of, like, are frustrating bugs, like bugs that kind of pop up that, like, stop you from being able to complete a mission if one triggers, and you know, that sort of stuff, like, frustrates me, and you know, kind of takes me out of it a little bit. So I mean, you know, if it's going above Star Fox and Mega Man 2, which are 12 and 11, you know, for me it would stop at, like, Final Fantasy 4 or Shovel Knight for sure, which are 8 and 7 right now.
Yeah, I could see this living in that range. And I mean, I played this game and I love this game. But even coming back to it, I think the last time I'd played it, and I've played it a few times, but I think it was like 2013 or 14. And coming in with 2020 eyes, like, I definitely felt some of the criticism about, like, okay, like, it's a little, you know, over-reliant on tropes and caricatures, and it's a little thin with some of the, like, extra content when you compare that to, like, Red Dead Redemption 2 or Witcher 3, like, these more modern open-world games, like, you can feel the age of it a little bit. So, you know, I wasn't, like, rushing to put it at the top part of this list, but this game has a legacy, and this game, for me, I, like, it's so immersive. Like, Chris, like you were saying, like, 10 years later, you playing for the first time, like, can still get lost in this game and kind of live the Old West life, so... I think it's a top tier game.
So for me, a couple things. You guys know I love Mario games and I love Zelda games. This is kind of an aside, but I've never played all of the Mario games and I've never played all of the Zelda games. So I've played, or even all the console releases. I've never played Mario Sunshine. I've never played Skyward Sword, for example, for Zelda. But I have played GTA 3, San Andreas, Vice City, GTA 4, GTA 5. So I've played all of those games, and I've never played Red Dead Redemption until we played this game. I fucking love open world games, too. I'm currently playing, I love the Yakuza games now, I love Yakuza 0, played Kiwami 2, I'm playing Judgment right now, played Assassin's Creed Origins, love open world games. So, like, I enjoyed playing this game for what it was. I felt like it was quite dated, especially with games that have come out since then. So, Witcher 3, Breath of the Wild, even Assassin's Creed Origins, playing through the Yakuza games again, like I mentioned. There's just so much more to do in modern open world games compared to this game. And it feels way more alive. And even before we got onto this call, I was playing GTA 4 to see what that game was like, which was made before this. And that game feels way more alive. Like, I think it's just because it's in a city. Yeah. There's, like, people outside.
I think it's
there's
all
cars.
Thematic related.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, this game just felt barren in that way. There wasn't, like... I couldn't just go down the road and have somebody stop. There was times where there's guys who were like, I'm being robbed. Can you help me? And, like, that's pretty cool, but it didn't feel like the same as you do in, like, a modern game that's come out in the last, like, 5 or 6 years. So I don't know. For me, when I look at the list, I think I had, like, just straight up enjoyment, a better time playing this than, like, a Final Fantasy VII. And I think this game is a bigger and better experience than a Star Fox 64. So I think it 100% has to go above Star Fox 64 to me. Where we start getting into some difficulty for me in the placement on this list is Mega Man 2, which was kind of genre-defining for what it was. Age of Empires 2, which is an excellent strategy game. And Super Metroid, which less so for me, but that kind of defined what a modern Metroidvania game is. So, like, and, like, the aesthetics in that game and, like, the sound and the design of the levels are very good. So I don't know, somewhere between and my top, like high end, this game cannot for me go above Shadow of the Colossus. Like, just can't. In my personal ranking, but anywhere from above Star Fox 64 to between Shadow of the Colossus for me is somewhere where I'm okay with.
Yeah, when I thought about where this game might land, like for me, I mean, I actually recently played Resident Evil, so that's fresh in my mind, and I'm like, all right, that area, like I don't know if I'm going to put this over GoldenEye 007. I haven't played Shadow of the Colossus, but I know that's been a sticking point on this pod before, so that is kind of the reasonable area that I saw this game topping out, like somewhere around Shovel Knight, Shadow of the Colossus, Resident Evil, maybe not going above those.
So that's 7, 6, and 5. I mean, personally, the more I think about it, the more I think that this doesn't go above Final Fantasy VII, which is 13. But I seem to be the outlier here.
I haven't played Final Fantasy VII. And like, you know, I just for Chris's point about playing Star Fox 64 or Mega Man 2, like those are short, kind of discrete games. Like if you were like one game for the rest of your life, there'd probably be more replayability with playing Star Fox 64 or Mega Man 2. But it's a different
type. Yeah, but I mean, I think they've also aged much better, and they're still like top tier games in their genre. Whereas
I don't think I agree that Red Dead has aged as poorly as you guys seem to think, though. Like, and I see the age.
I just think it's dated.
And so is 64.
You know, I think of like open world games that have come since they're like Marvel Spider-Man or even like the later Arkham games. Like, you know, they're a big living world, but the only stuff that really happens, like you have to swing around and like stop crime. Whereas like Red Dead, it's like, you know, there is actually a fair amount of like a variety in like the random world events that are happening that you can get involved with and ignore. And like I said, like, I think the first chunk of this game where it's like, I mean, I just spent hours bounty hunting and playing card games and, like, you know, getting drinks at the bar and stuff like that. So I think, like, yeah, it's 10 years old and open world games have come a long way, but I still think it's a pretty robust world for what it is. But,
yeah. Yeah, it's funny you brought up Spider-Man. I totally forgot about that game. And I love that game when I played it. And I also played, I think I have a better experience, had a better experience recently. Well, not recently. It was a couple years ago with Horizon Zero Dawn, which is another PS4 exclusive. That game was dope. Oh, that game is so underrated. Came out the same week as Breath of the Wild. And that's it. Just got overshadowed as shit. And it's because it's basically, it kind of looks the same. That's the only reason why I got overshadowed. But, and also Breath of the Wild was just like a tremendous game.
Yeah.
But.
And that's not to say that if we rank Red Dead at like, you know, some high point here, like obviously I think Witcher 3 would go over it when we rank it. Like there are plenty of more modern open world games that would probably go above it, but where the list is right now, that's kind of where I see it kind of living.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of picking spots kind of based on like what our personal preferences are towards games, because this is like a part of the list that's like you have like these iconic RPGs, you also got some like retro platformers. I think our preferences, personal preferences, coming through. Trying to be objective, I think, you know, I don't think Red Dead is you know, I think you could probably say it's better than Star Fox 64. I think on any level that you want to compare it to Mega Man 2, be it legacy or gameplay or fun factor, I feel like Mega Man 2 is probably wins in all categories for me, you know? But that's more me because I'm much more of a retro guy, but...
I mean, I feel that way. I just think that Mega Man 2 represents, like, a peak in, you know, the platformer genre and in Mega Man games. It's just... I mean, yes, it is personal preference, but... I don't know. I think anywhere in this region, it's Red Dead is considered a good game. You know, it's the top,
right?
You know, 15 of 70 something so far.
So, Steve, where would you be okay putting it? Where let's hear your final argument before we kind of come to a compromise.
Final argument. Well, yeah, no, I agree with those points too. Like about Mega Man 2 being like kind of a for its genre and type of game, a peak game. And I wouldn't say that that's necessarily true of Red Dead. Obviously, we just named lots of other open world games that have come out since then, and it's going to, you know, fade farther and farther into the background as, like, you know, Cyberpunk 2077 comes out, you know, assuming that game is good. Like,
maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. But, like, the open world genre is not going anywhere right now, and it's just going to get more robust and immersive and fine-tuned, and every time that happens, Red Dead's going to feel a little older. So, you know, I'm sympathetic to, and it's tough too, because we're in this top range. And like Chris was saying, like certain games, you're like, oh, I don't know if it goes over that. But then there are games ahead of it, like, you know, that you might feel comfortable it jumping, like Super Metroid or Age of Empires 2, where Mega Man 2 is the block. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm comfortable with it in the kind of 8 to 12 range, somewhere between Final Fantasy 4 at 8 and Star Fox 64 at 12. But yeah, that's where I'll leave it.
I am usually the guy that comes to a compromise on these things, but where does everybody, this seems like we have a pretty wide range. So, and you mentioned that your high end would be 12. Where does, are we going with 12 or are we going with somewhere lower than that?
I would put it between Star Fox and Mega Man 2, personally. As we've discussed it more.
Because it sounds like that's where it's going. Is there any... Do we want to go higher than Mega Man 2? Does anybody besides Steve want to go higher
than
Mega Man
2? I
want to
go higher than Mega Man 2.
I think Steve might be the only one.
We haven't really heard
from you recently, Mike. I mean... You don't think it goes above Mega Man 2?
Bring us home, Mike. What do you got?
Mega Man 2 is a tough block.
Yeah.
Mega Man 2 is like an action, like a very, very good action platformer that came out in 1989. Like that I can still go back to and play, and it's still fun and it's still great. And if I played that today, as somebody who enjoys retro games, I would rather play Mega Man 2. And I'm staring at Mega, and it's doing that thing where I can't really... It's like dissolving into words because I keep talking about it. You know that thing that happens? I feel like I'm having a seizure. Am I having a seizure right now? Is my brain cramping up?
Do you smell coke?
Still got two more podcasts to go. Okay.
Yeah, and so, I'm sympathetic to that take. I think that I understand the defense of Mega Man 2. I do think that Red Dead is better than Age of Empires 2 and Super Metroid. And, you know, I've never played Final Fantasy 4, so I can't speak to it. But I'm willing to live with this ranking.
I'm less attached to Age of Empires 2 and Super Metroid and Final Fantasy 4, but I do think that Mega Man is a very key game on there. Mega Man 2.
And I know that I worked to put Age of Empires and Super Metroid and Shovel Knight above Mega Man 2. So yeah.
I think they're all in the right spot. I think right below Mega Man is a fair, like, I mean, beating out Star Fox 64, know, that's, and Final Fantasy 7? Shit.
That's higher than I thought it would be. I do think that Red Dead Redemption 2 might go above it. I haven't played it yet, but I've heard very good things about it. It sounds very divisive. Let's just put it that way in terms of everybody who's on this call and what I've read online. Some people fucking love that game. Some people do not love
that game. Well, you'll note that this podcast ranked it as the second best game of the last decade. So,
I'll just say if we do decide to put Red Dead ahead of Mega Man 2, I can live with it because the Undead game like kind of starts right off with like a homage to Vincent Price kind of narrating
Chris,
the
stop.
Intro.
Chris,
so
keep talking. Keep talking.
Chris, stop.
That doesn't sound like a good reason. I'm just going to say that.
Let's put it as the new number nine under Final Fantasy 4.
On that game, all right?
Chris, let's make a pact. I will use Final Fantasy 4 as our firewall and we'll put it right below there.
I would be fine with that. I mean, I made the argument for Mega Man 2, Age of Empires, and Super Metroid. I don't think you're better than this.
That's what I'm saying.
I think...
My head's going to explode.
Yeah, I think any veto I might have whatsoever, or, you know, wall that I can put in between this and that happening, I don't think I can go above Mega Man 2.
You know,
I think that's really where it probably should be. I mean, I just think with Final Fantasy VII, I just think Final Fantasy VII has aged not super well, which is funny because like older Final Fantasies on our list are above Final Fantasy VII, and they have aged much better than the first 3D Final Fantasy did to me. So I just think that's why I would put Red Dead above Final Fantasy VII.
You know what? Let's not drag this out. Let's put it below Mega Man 2, above Star Fox 64. Let's just do it.
You got it.
Done.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a new number 12 on the endless list. It is Red Dead Redemption. You have cracked the top 15. That is a very good space for you. Open world action game, action adventure. And that is That is that.
That cool. is that.
We've come to a decision.
We find ourselves red, dead, and redeemed here.
And someday we'll be red, dead, redeemed too, but that day is not today.
Or it'll be red, dead, redeemed. No, we'll just be red, dead, revolved maybe someday.
Oh, we'll definitely be for Red Dead Redemption 2, but that game is not, I don't think, as good as...
Yeah, I think that game's going to the bottom.
I think the next...
What'd you say?
Call of Juarez Gunslinger should be the next Western game we do.
Oh my god, I played that last year.
Has anyone ever played Gun? That's another Western that I played before Red Dead, and I got them confused for a long time. Before I played this game.
Yeah, there's... Well, we get another Western coming up within the month that Chris and I are really thought about.
True, true.
So,
no spoilers.
But yes, spoilers. This has been the podcast. We did it. So you all on who are listening can follow us again on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, etc. You can follow the podcast at It's So Bad Pod on the Twitter. It's So Bad Pod. @gmail.com is the email address. If you have any questions, qualms, concerns, if you want to berate us, that's cool. I'll listen. I read every email that we get, which is few and far between, but yes, you can email us. itssobadpod@gmail.com. But thank you guys so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with another pod.
Yeehaw.